What I'd like to do is begin with a couple of lines from Rumi. There is a way between voice and presence where information flows. In disciplined silence it opens, with wandering talk it closes. There's a way between voice and presence where information flows. In disciplined silence it opens, with wandering talk it closes. So you might have noticed in the guided meditation tonight, the emphasis was more on listening than often we have. And one of the liberating qualities of attention is really a receptive listening kind of attention, where there's enough quietness inside that information can flow. We can really be open to the timeless mystery that's here. We're not creating all the internal static, you know, that kind of blocks the channels, which is what I think Rumi was speaking of. So I'd like to explore that tonight, really, how we cultivate a listening attention. And I was reading the Science Times. I love the Science Times. And I was reading past ones because they add up. I don't get to them. So I had a pile of fast ones. So this is news from about a month ago. But I was reading about the narwhal. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. The whale in the Arctic. And about the tusks they have. You know how they have these tusks that grow up to 9 feet? And they just discovered, through history, these tusks had been considered like unicorn horns, and they'd been connected and collected by, like, emperors around the world would, you know, consider them priceless, and they'd pay huge fortunes for them, like palaces worth for just one of these horns, because they were considered magical, and they were from these narwhals. And they found out that these horns are, first of all, they're the left tooth of the narwhal that just grew out. And they're the most amazing appendage, the sensitive appendage that actually is the way they listen and pick up information about their environment. There's all these nerves that go from the core of the tusk out, and they find out, and they can find out about the water temperature and the salinity. And so, as one of the scientists describe it, the narwhal is continuously trying to understand its environment. And this is part of surviving and thriving, that the degree of sensitivity to our environment allows us to connect and operate in a way that's meaningful. Well, I love that. I love this appendage coming out like that, and that really this is what we're cultivating, is a sensitivity as humans and maybe other creatures that has this kind of depth of really tuning in and receiving what's happening. When we review the moments in our lives where we felt were most meaningful, kind of epiphanies, the moments of real connection, our tenderness, our awe, there's a common denominator of what allows these moments to be so special. And that's that we were there for them. There was a presence. That there's no way our life really touches us unless there's a quality of paying attention that's going on. And it doesn't matter whether they're happy moments or sad moments. What makes them meaningful, what makes them the moments that we're not kind of just racing along the surface, but we've kind of dropped in, is that we were paying attention. And that's what, it's this kind of wholehearted presence that brings alive our life. And I mention often there's a kind of despair when we feel that we're racing to the finish line and we're so occupied with getting somewhere that there's a sense we haven't lived our moments. And we can feel it. It's a kind of existential angst that we're just, you know, going through the routines and we're living in this kind of cocoon of familiar thoughts, but that we're not really here. 2 days ago, one of my dearest friends lost his mom and was, you know, filled with great grief and also with, as so many of you know, a sense of such a, so much of the beauty and the mystery and the love that's here. And it's because he, you know, her dying process got him so present. And it was okay that there was grief, but it's because it's that presence that it turned it into sacred moments. So all meditation training is in some way learning how to pay attention, learning how to really sense sacred presence by listening, by seeing what's here, not interfering with it. It's the presence that isn't trying to manage anything. And that's not so common. We spend most of our moments in some way trying to manipulate our experience, not just be there for it. So Thomas Merton writes, "Of what avail is it if we can travel to the moon, if we cannot cross the abyss that separates us from ourselves? This is the most important of all journeys, and without it, all of the rest are useless." So we really practice, we train our attention to cross the abyss, to actually be here for the life that's within and around us. And the given is that our minds are incredibly distracted. In another New York Times article I read some months ago, it was in the business section, it was describing how we're addicted to multiple stimuli. And most of us are: online, phone, internal review list, you know. And we get very bored or anxious or restless when we're not occupied in some way. And it's sad because what we most long for, I mean, the experiences we most cherish that feel like real life arrive when we're quiet and we're not occupied. So there's a meditation I often do whenever I have a chance with groups that are at some of the workshops or longer retreats, where the inquiry is really what we love. And you can't do it too much. It's an incredible thing just to keep reflecting on what you love. And what happens, one of the revelations is, as one person said, everything I love doesn't cost anything, you know? We love very simple things. What we really love is being in love. That's what we really love. We think it's fixed on oh, I love that kind of a sunset, or I love it when the blossoms start coming out. But we're loving the feeling of aliveness and love that we're experiencing. So, Rumi again. "Totally conscious and apropos of nothing, you come to see me. Is someone here, I ask? The moon, the full moon, is inside your house. My friends and I go running out into the street. I'm in here, comes a voice from the house, but we aren't listening. We're looking up at the sky. Lo, I am with you always, means when you look for God, God is in the look of your eyes, in the thought of looking. Nearer to you than yourself are things that have happened to you. There's no need to go outside. Be melting snow. Wash yourself of yourself. A white flower grows in the quietness. Let your tongue become that flower." So our habitual way is that rather than staying at home and listening and discovering right here what we're looking for and chasing after constantly, incessant dialogue, incessantly leaning forward, it's right here, and yet we stay busy. So So just to we'll deepen the exploration a little of really how is it that we keep leaving home, and really how do we come back? And just sense yourself again as you're listening tonight that the listening itself is a practice. I mean, I'll use words and evoke ideas, but see if you can keep coming back, pausing within, just right now, just sense yourself here. And you might just close your eyes for a moment. And just again, hear sounds. And just sense the awareness that's aware. Receptive, not needing to occupy. What we find is that when we pause and begin to quiet, that there's immediately conditioning that kicks in. And the Buddha described it that in every moment of experience, there's either pleasantness or unpleasantness or a kind of neutral feeling, and that we're always reacting to that. Now, when we get mindful, we can notice the reaction and not follow it down the track. But for most of us, when we're moving through the day, we'll have a pleasant experience. And rather than just receiving it, letting it come, letting it go, there's some grabbing onto it. So we might have a warm spring day, for instance. Remember that? And then there comes up, I just can't wait till spring really settles in, you know. Enough of winter. You know, I really hope I have time. I'm going to have to schedule in seeing the cherry blossoms this year. Then we get out our book to see when we're going to go see them. And, or else we might hear the birds, the spring birds, and then start thinking, got to get that bird feeder set up. And this year I'm really going to, you know, you get the idea. It just kind of, or that we see the crocuses and daffodils and start planning our garden. We don't just simply experience with our senses what's here. We roll into something more. With unpleasant, it's even more obvious. We have an unpleasant experience, physical discomfort or whatever, and rather than just simply noticing the sensations, we might be sitting and we start thinking, God, how long can I sit still with this one? But then if I move, I'm the only schmuck in the room just constantly shifting around. And, you know, we just spin off on things. And we're anticipating. It's like as soon as there's unpleasant, we anticipate about what more is going to happen. This is called suffering. One of the, I found a story that I loved that explained it so well. This is about a person in a monastery that had bad teeth, and he lived in, found a surgeon in Perth who was willing to extract his teeth without anesthetic. And he had been there several times and he found it no problem. Now this is what's written. Allowing a tooth to be extracted by a dentist without anesthetic might seem impressive enough, but then this guy went one step better. He decided he'd pull out his own teeth without anesthetics. We saw him outside the monastery workshop, holding a freshly pulled tooth smeared with his blood in the claws of an ordinary pair of pliers. It was no problem. He cleaned the pliers of blood before he returned them to the workshop. I asked him how he had managed to do such a thing. What he said exemplifies why fear is the major ingredient of pain. When I decided to pull out my own tooth, it was such a hassle going all the way to the dentist. That decision didn't hurt. When I walked to the workshop, that didn't hurt. When I picked up the pair of pliers, still, that didn't hurt. When I held the tooth in the grip of the pliers, that didn't hurt either. When I wiggled the pliers and pulled, it did hurt then, but only for a couple of seconds. Once the tooth was out, it didn't hurt much at all. There was only 5 seconds of pain, that's all. You, my reader, probably grimaced when you read this true story. Because of fear, you probably felt more pain than he did. And if you tried the same feat, it would probably hurt terribly even before you reached the workshop to get the pliers. Anticipation, fear, is the major ingredient of pain. It's true. How many moments of our life we have suffered when it wasn't in that moment that anything difficult was going on. It was how we were rolling fast forward into the future. Our minds are really busy. That this is what I mean by being preoccupied. Rather than listening and receptive to what's here, we're on the way into the future. I've mentioned many times, I love that the Chinese syllable for the word busy is heart-killing. And when our minds are really busy, when we're preoccupied, we cannot have that sensitivity, like I described with the narwhal, that sensitivity to understand what's right here. It's almost like there's soundproofing. The static is so much we can't really feel our own vulnerability or tenderness or the tenderness that's around us. So there's pleasant, unpleasant. Of course, there's neutral. And it's a big deal how much when things are neutral, we go on automatic. And again, we're not listening. We're not paying attention. We do our normal routine of how we respond to others, and there's not a sense of really paying attention in any deeper way to what's going on, to who's there, to what's happening. We're just in our routine. We're in our persona doing our thing. That's during the neutral times. An example, a young woman was pulled over in Austin, Texas for speeding. As the Texas state trooper walked over to her car window, flipping open his ticket book, she said, "I bet you're going to sell me a ticket to the Texas State Police Ball." With his normal authority and dignity, he said, "Texas state troopers don't have balls." There was a moment of silence while she smiled and he realized what he had just said. He then closed his book, got back in his patrol car and left. She was laughing too hard to start her car. So when we're in automatic gear, we're not tuned into what's happening around us. We just kind of... I like that one. That was fresh off the press, by the way. That just came in. So the invitation, really, of spiritual life is learning how to pause, how to step out of our conditioned reaction of leaning forward, anticipating what's going to go wrong, tensing against, being on our automatic, and how to really be here. And the possibility is a tremendous spontaneity, a deep sensitivity, a healing attention that can heal what we've been running away from. And in the deepest way, when we're really listening, really receptive, when we're not controlling, the tight sense of a self, a deficient self, a separate self dissolves. Explore that one for yourself. When there's just listening, there's just the sounds coming and going and the feelings arising and dissolving, and we're not in any way adding on a judgment or trying to control it, there's an inner freedom and spaciousness. The self pops in as soon as we try to control, but not in moments of allowing. Similarly, there's intimacy with other people when we can listen. It's not possible if we are busy running our notions about who's here and about what we're going to say. The only real intimacy is when there's enough quietness that we can actually take in who's here. There was an article I read This is Steve Martin. He writes, "There's now a sophisticated communication technique used between men and women that eases marital strain and opens wide the doors of understanding between the sexes. This new technique developed by psychologists and sociologists is called listening." It will be interesting to see if the new technique lasts or whether it will disappear and be replaced by older, more traditional methods such as leaving the room. And then you have Maxine, I don't know how many of you read Maxine, it says, guess which four words a woman can say to scare a man out of his wits. And she starts in the first frame, she's like dressed as a fireman, and she's saying, our house is burning. And the guy's reading the paper, goes, humph. Then she comes in, she says, the Martians have landed, and she's surrounded by an alien, and he goes, oh, really, dear. The next one, you have terminal cancer, and he's still reading, that's nice. The last one, we need to talk. Uh-huh, no, please don't, dear God, I'm too young to die. You know, so you get the idea. There's a beautiful understanding that the most profound way that we express our love is by paying attention, by just simply listening. That unconditional presence is the deepest way. And we all know how often we move out of that into fixing, or into commenting, or into in some way trying to make things different. One of the stories I shared here several years ago has always touched me. This is a story about an African tribe, and it says, when a woman in a certain African tribe knows she's pregnant, she goes out into the wilderness with a few friends, and together they pray and meditate until they hear the song of the child who's about to arrive. They recognize that every soul has its own vibration that expresses its unique flavor and purpose, so they listen. And when the women attune to the song, they sing it out loud. Then they return to the tribe and teach it to others. When the child is born, the community gathers and sings the child's song to him or her. Later, when the child enters education, the village gathers and chants the child's song. And when the child passes through the initiation to adulthood, the people again come together and sing. At the time of marriage, the person hears his or her song. And finally, when that soul is about to pass from this world, the family and friends gather at the person's bed, just as they did at their birth, and they sing the person to the next life. The African tribe, there is one other occasion upon which villagers sing to a child. If at any time during his or her life the person commits a crime or aberrant social act, the individual is called to the center of the village, and the people in the community form a circle around them, and they sing their song to them. So when I first heard this, I was so touched by the possibility and beauty and intimacy of that kind of deep listening, that we could listen to each other and sense kind of the song of the soul. And it doesn't have to be like a traditional song, more just a listening and receiving, really a sense of beingness, you know, that's both unique and universal. So there's a training. You know, meditation's been likened to listening to music, because when we listen to music, we're not trying to get to the end, you know. It's like dancing. You're not trying to dance your way and speed it up so you can get to the end of the dance. You're just step by step, or note by note, melody is there. So we listen just to be there. It's an unconditional kind of relating. There's no tampering with the experience. It's kind of been described as a sky that includes all kinds of weather. And no matter what weather appears in that listening attention, we're not tainted or stained. There's just a spaciousness that receives. So again, I just invite you just to take a moment, if it helps, to close your eyes. Just feel yourself sitting here and let the awareness be a listening attention. The sounds might be pleasant or not, maybe neutral. Just sense the capacity to just notice the comings and goings with a relaxed and spacious attention. if a thought arises, we can sense it as another sound. Or it might be a sound by it in an image, but received, just letting it come and go like weather systems in the sky. It's a kind of homecoming in our life if we can pause and just relax, open, and just listening, sense what's happening, being with. Even with the difficulties, we can develop this capacity to open. The poet Wendell Berry writes, "I go among the trees and sit still. All my stirring becomes quiet around me, like circles on water. My tasks lie in their places where I left them, asleep like cattle. Then what it is afraid of me comes and lives a while in my sight. What it fears in me leaves it. It sings, and I hear its song. Then what I am afraid of comes. I live for a while in its sight. What I fear in it leaves it, and the fear of it leaves me. It sings, and I hear its song." So living for a while in its sight, that we have different experiences arise in our body, in our hearts. And the challenge is, rather than react, can we meet them with a listening attention? When fear arises, anger, hurt, can we let go of the thoughts and just open to what's here with a listening attention? You might explore that right now if there's some difficulty you're working with in your life, just to sense this possibility. Maybe a situation you encountered today or yesterday that where there was some reactivity, some fear, some anger, some hurt. So in a way, like Wendell Berry writes, just you're here amongst others and sitting still, just to let the situation come to mind. And let it live a while in your sight. You might sense what's the worst part or most difficult, what you're afraid of. And then just notice what happens if you let it be like weather in a sky. Just listen to what's going on inside you. Feel with a receptive attention what's happening in your body. Not controlling anything. Just letting go of thoughts and being fully here. Listening to your experience. Totally allowing. It's a receptivity that says yes unconditionally to what's right here. If the mind gets distracted, just explore letting sounds be a kind of home base or anchor. Just listen again. And then gently listen and feel into the body. Absolutely allowing whatever's here to be here. So in a way, there's a simplicity to this training. It's to pause over and over again, and then just simply to listen. And yet the challenge, as you know, is that our habit is very deeply ingrained to sense that things are going to go wrong if we don't very actively try to control them. So what happens is things are difficult and we immediately latch on to how to fix things, and we're very much spend our time judging ourselves and judging others. We're kind of badgering and we lose our attunement with our inner rhythms. One of the real sufferings of not listening is that when we're busy trying to control things and judge things, we lose track of what really is going on inside us and what we need. There's a story about two novice Zen monks arguing about whose master was more involved. One claimed that his teacher was so powerful that he could stand on one bank of the river and write his name in the sand on the other shore. "That's nothing," the second one said, thus winning the debate. "When my master is hungry, he eats. And when he is tired, he sleeps." I like that. It's from this book on simplicity. Right? So we can also see it with others. We cannot tune into what another person needs if we're so anxious that we're trying to figure out how to fix or how to make it right, or when we're defending ourselves. We see it with our children, we see it with partners, that we're kind of like addicted to having people do it our way. You know, whether it's how to drive the car or put away the dishes. But the sad thing is that we lose our sensitivity. It's like that, again, I keep thinking of that tusk. It's like we lose, when we're preoccupied and spinning and trying to control, we cannot take in information. We can't understand our environment. We can't understand each other. In one passage of Zorba the Greek by Kazantzakis, this is just a short piece of it. "I remember one morning when I discovered a cocoon in the bark of a tree, just as the butterfly was making a hole in its case and preparing to come out. I waited a while, but it was too long appearing, and I was impatient. I bent over it, breathed onto it to warm it. I warmed it as quickly as I could, and the miracle began to happen before my eyes, faster than life. The case opened, the butterfly started slowly crawling out, and I shall never forget my horror when I saw how its wings were folded back and crumpled. The wretched butterfly tried with its whole trembling body to unfold them. Bending over it, I tried to help it with my breath. In vain. It needed to be hatched out patiently, and the unfolding of the wings needed to be a gradual process in the sun. Now it was too late. My breath had forced the butterfly to appear, all crumpled before its time. It struggled desperately, and a few seconds later, died in the palm of my hand. That little body is, I do believe, the greatest weight I have on my conscience. For I realize today that it is a mortal sin to violate the greatest laws of nature. We should not hurry, we should not be impatient, but we should confidently obey the eternal rhythm." I read this in part because I know so many people right now at a juncture in their life where they're trying to figure things out, whether it's in a difficult relationship or work, with their own bodies. And we can figure out a certain amount, but the deep guidance, the deep wisdom, the deep intuition on how to respond to each other and how to respond to our lives comes from listening. It comes from a quality of really getting quiet. And when we're impatient, when we try to manipulate ourselves or each other, we lose contact with a wisdom and presence that pervades this universe and is really what we are. We lose contact with our essence. So interpersonally, this listening is a deep healing for others. Every one of us needs to be listened to. Every one of us. It allows us to feel, it's kind of the mirroring that lets us know we matter. And I remember reading Archbishop Desmond Tutu writing about the current era that we live in as a time of radical brokenness in all our relationships, everywhere we look, in the global family, disconnection and fear of one another. And he described it, it's an increasingly noisy era. People shout at each other in print, at work, on TV. Volume is directly related to our need to be listened to. People are clamoring for attention. We'll do whatever it takes to be noticed. It's the same thing with our inner busyness of our mind. It's like something wants attention, and we keep spinning faster and faster to figure it out, rather than the deepest kind of attention that comes when we get quiet and just bring a kind of presence to our being. So he describes how listening reconnects when we listen to ourselves and listen to each other, that we're all looking for belonging, and listening and being listened to is the connecting. And there's one quote from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission on the hearings in South Africa I'll read that speak to this that I thought was really beautiful. Many of those who testified to the atrocities they had endured under apartheid spoke of being healed by giving testimony. One young man who had been blinded when a policeman shot him in the face at close range said, "I feel what has brought my eyesight back is to come here and tell the story. I feel what has been making me sick all the time is the fact that I couldn't tell my story." We heal each other when we get quiet enough to really listen. There's another description I loved. Someone wrote this from that was a very elderly person in a nursing home. She says, "Heard, if only they understood how important it is that we be heard. I can take being in a nursing home. It's really all right with a positive attitude. My daughter has her hands full, 3 kids and a job. She visits regularly. I understand. But most people here, they just want to tell their story. That's what they have to give, don't you see? And it's a precious thing to them. It's their life they want to give. You'd think people would understand what it means to us to give our lives in a story. So we listen to each other. Most of what goes on here is people listening to each other's stories. People who work here consider that to be filling time. If only they knew, if they just take a minute to listen." So the training, it's not abstract, and it's not just psychological in terms of a current day. I mean, the Buddha in the Pali Canon was described as the great physician. And Kuan Yin, the Bodhisattva of compassion, as the listener to the sorrows of the world. It's like that is what wakes up our heart, that quality of presence. And each of us is a Bodhisattva. An awakening being, really, we know it intuitively. We know that when we really are at home and loving, we're holding a space and listening. offering that kind of open-hearted presence to our inner life and to each other. There's one writer that described a beautiful practice I thought I'd share with you. She said, think about whom you might approach, someone you don't know, don't like, or whose manner of living is a mystery to you. This is how to extend the training. Someone you don't know, don't like, or whose manner of living is a mystery to you. What would it take to begin a conversation with that person? Would you be able to ask them for their opinion or explanation and then sit quietly to listen to their answer? Could you keep yourself from arguing or defending or saying anything for a while? Could you encourage them to just keep telling you their version of things besides telling you their side of the story? So there's training when it's easy, and then really training when it's not so easy. I was at a meeting last night, and it was a really wonderful meeting with the folks in IMCW. And I noticed myself when I had strong opinions and I was really needing to get them out there, the tightness, and when I just said, oh, just a time just to listen, and I really let myself listen, how much less self there was. There wasn't that tightness. So this is the basic practice. That notice the selfing. The selfing is the one that wants to control, that's commenting, interpreting, the incessant dialogue. That's what generates an ongoing sense of a self that's here, others out there, and that something's kind of wrong or missing. And then when we begin to quiet, just listening to sounds, listening to the breath, body, there's a way in which that tight, busy, doing self begins to be more transparent. We're still completely functional, but we have access to the awareness and space and presence that's really our home. And it's very contagious. When there's some quietness, it really gives others a space to sense themselves coming home, because they're not busy having to react against something. One teacher, Joko Beck, described it kind of as ice cubes melting, that when we dissolve some of our busy, hard-edged striving, we start melting and it creates kind of an environment for others to melt too. I like that one, that we all become kind of melted ice cubes. In the deepest way, I mentioned a few different kind of gifts or blessings from quieting down. And one is really that there's some healing that's possible. When we quiet, we stop running away from the parts of ourselves that need attention and healing. And there's intimacy possible. The deepest is what the Buddha called the liberation that really comes from a shift in our sense of identity. When we stop being so busy, when we stop thinking so much about who we are and what we're doing, there's a dissolving of that sense of selfness that really reveals what I've described as that radiance in the Golden Buddha. In that quietness, we really discover loving presence, our essence. So it's with that we'll just do our final sitting. And I'd like to say as a preamble to this final sitting that the given is that our minds are busy, so this isn't about making war with a busy mind. It's more about beginning to notice it, and in that noticing, just to gently sense, okay, sound, thoughts, come home again, come home again. So sitting in a way that's comfortable, that allows you to be alert and relaxed. Just listening. relaxing into the awareness that knows sound. For some, it helps to feel the out-breath and just gently dissolve out with the out-breath. Feel that you're letting go into that spaciousness that includes all sounds. Including all sounds, shuffling of papers, the sound of these words, the outside. Unconditional presence. And in that deep listening, you might sense who's listening. Just to look back into awareness, who's listening? And just relax and let go into that spaciousness. That open, living awareness. The silence from which all sound arises. Lo, I am with you always, means when you look for God, God is in the look of your eyes, in the thought of looking. Nearer to you than yourself are things that have happened to you. There's no need to go outside. Be melting snow. Wash yourself of yourself. A white flower grows in the quietness. Let your tongue become that flower. So I want to thank you for your attention tonight and encourage you to talk a lot after class with each other and listen deeply to each other too. But really, as I mentioned at the beginning, it's really nice to greet someone you've never spoken to and just say hello and find out who's there.
The teaching you have received has been freely offered. If you would like to contact the Insight Meditation Community of Washington to make a donation or to learn more about our programs, please visit our website at www.imcw.org.